Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Time to bring in one of our best friends, one of our best weekly guests, one of the best at what he does, Chip Towers of the AJC. Good morning, Chip. How the heck are you?
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. How are you today?
Doing good.
I know you're an early riser as well. To answer Tyler's question, have you had the ESPN2 on for any amount of time watching the Korean baseball organization these past couple of weeks?
You know, I have not caught any Korean baseball yet, but I've been hearing about it. It seems to have captured the imagination of the Americas, since there's not a whole lot else to watch.
Yeah.
So, as you guys have detailed, you know, slowly but surely we're starting to see some things come back out there. This past weekend, we didn't have to watch reruns of great games all weekend. There were some actual contests being competed.
Yeah, it was nice, and Tyler's a big NASCAR guy. It was nice for him to sit down. One thing that the Korean baseball organization is getting or giving us, and look, it's not in a perfect scenario, but if we have to endure a lot of our sports coming up with no fans in the stands, and the conversations that you hear seems to lean more and more towards that, or at least altered in some way, shape, or form, we get to see what it looks like on the Korean baseball organization, and it's not as hard to watch on TV as I thought it would. But Chip, as we are, what is today? May 19th. Sort of the same thing I asked you last week. We're now a week further along, and decision-making has to come. There was a vote this past week in the SEC about when players should return. Where are we standing right now, and is that glimmer of normal you just kind of reference? Is it maybe sooner rather than later?
Well, you know, by all indications, there's a vote coming up this week at the end of this week, but among SEC presidents about whether football players should be allowed to return to campus. And the discussion, as I understand it, and I know this has been confirmed from presidents or commissioners, so it's kind of secondhand information, but whether players should be allowed to return June 1st or June 15th. Or not at all in June. You know, that's the thing that's not being discussed. Is that's another one of the options. Is that we don't, are they allowed to return in June? And if they're allowed to return in June, would it be the 1st or the 15th? And you know, there's a real split in opinion as to whether that should or could happen. You know, I think June is a very important month if you're looking at trying to start the season on time as scheduled. June's going to be a very important month, and the SEC presidents are supposed to weigh in on that. Now, whether that'll be a drop-dead vote, whether it'll be let's discuss it and table it until next month, you never know. As we've discussed every week, Logan, you know, this will be decided by the science, by the medicine behind it. You know, when you start to look at the logistics, I mean, this has got to be discussed right now in great detail. So if you're talking about allowing players to return to campus, and understandably, you can see why coaches and programs would want this to happen. They're going to feel a lot better about the care of their athletes when they're in their own arms than when they're scattered across you know, the South and beyond, and working out in private gyms and doing things like that. At least if you have them in your care, you can do just that. You can care for them. But there's also, when you talk about 85 scholarship players, you're talking about 25 or more walk-ons. You're talking about 125 players probably on average. What do you do? Do you test them every day? Do you test them when they come in? You know, do you test them twice a day? You know, what about when they leave and go out onto campus or into other places? So it's just there's so many layers. It's so complicated. I'm just glad I don't have to make those kind of decisions myself.
No doubt.
I'll just report on them when they happen.
Real quick, one second, Tyler. Sorry. Yep. With the vote coming up next or pretty soon, you said, with the NCAA presidents or SEC presidents, there was a vote, am I saying this right, that took place with the SEC coaches, and it was all but Philip Fulmer of Tennessee voted for June 1st, and I think he suggested like June 15th or so. How much weight will that weigh on the president's decision because it was not unanimous amongst the SEC coaches, if any? What are our expectations for that?
Well, I would think very little. Look, at the end of the day, I mean, you know where coaches are going to stand on these issues, right? I mean, generally. And, they're going to want their players in their care. They're going to want to be able to manage the situation, control the situation. Let's be honest about it. And coaches are always going to vote for that. But, you know, this is much larger than the SEC. This is obviously a worldwide pandemic. It's a national issue in terms of sports, and they're only going to do what they can do. So it'll come down to the presidents, but there'll be certainly all of that will be taken into account. But I think at the end of the day, there are so many people who are weighing in on this. You're starting with our president and federal governments. You're talking about, individual conferences, the NCAA. I think it's impossible that all of this will be in lockstep. You know, I don't think you can get anybody in agreement on anything. But the 14 presidents and the commissioner of the SEC are ultimately going to decide this. And they're going to decide this with all those other factors coming into play. The main one, the safety of the players and all the people who have to care for the players, strength and conditioning coaches, support staff, the individuals who clean these facilities, all of that has to be taken into account.
Speaking with our good buddy Chip Towers from the AJC.com.
So just to play devil's advocate here, let's just say players aren't allowed to come back on campus until August with presumably other students. What kind of ripple effect do you think that could have on the season?
Well, I mean, a lot, but, I probably sound like a broken record that we talk about this. You know, all scenarios are on the table, and all of them have been fully vetted, at this point. And, essentially you're talking about, four different plans, I mean, there's a plan of starting on time, and then how do you protect the staff and players and whether fans are there. There's a plan to start later in the fall, mid-October is what I'm hearing, and then what that would look like. There's a scenario where you wouldn't have camp until December and the season starts, sometime in early January. And then another scenario is no season whatsoever, there's an asterisk for 2020 and you just skip it all together. All of those have been fully vetted at this point, I would imagine. I mean, groups and task force are meeting, daily, multiple times a week. Greg McGarrity, at least a couple of times a week with athletic directors in the SEC, National Trainers Association, they're all discussing these things. And so that's what we're looking at. So if you don't come back in June, I think the odds of starting after the beginning of the season are much greater. I really don't know. Nobody's really sharing what the innermost thoughts are. And I think we'll find something out when the presidents get together and finally vote on something later this week.
You mentioned those task forces. I saw this on AJC.com that Ron Corson is part of an SEC task force that will guide the return of athletics. We have sang his praises, you and I, on this show before, but I have no problem doing it again. If Ron's on a task force, I'm, one, feeling pretty good about it, and, two, I'm going to listen to what he says when it comes time to make these decisions.
Well, that's right, and look, we can't forget here, Georgia has already experienced a person on their football staff being confirmed case of the COVID-19. So it's already been in your building. And so I think because of that, Ron Corson is going to be, I started to say even more vigilant, but you can't get any more vigilant than Ron Corson when it comes to the health and care of Georgia's athletes. You know, Georgia's really, really fortunate to have a man of his esteemed background, and just there is no more well-respected trainer, and I put air quotes around that because he's so much more than that. Georgia's director of sports medicine is as good as they come, and you know, so Georgia's already had to deal with this situation, being on their being in their own building. You know, I don't know how many cases there might have been on campus total at this point. I'm sure it's been reported somewhere, but you know, you got to be extremely careful about this situation. Because look, you know, when you cut through it, okay, at the end of the day, this is going to come down to liability, and nobody wants to have the liability of somebody of inviting everybody back, right? And let's get back to normal, and let's start sweating and you know, doing what we know athletes do, sweating and spitting and
right.
You know. What do they call it? Snot rockets, you know, when you're running wind sprints. I mean, this is what you're talking about, and you start doing that on a daily basis as per normal. You know, one guy, one person, one athlete, somebody comes down with it, and a worst-case scenario comes out of it. That's some mighty liability that an institution would be looking at. And so I think you're going to see extreme caution, you know. And look, guys, I mean – I've gone back and forth. I've really vacillated. Yeah, it sounds like they're going to come back. They got to come back. The economics say you got to come back. There's certainly a scenario where you can do this without fans or maybe just students. You know, it's got to be some kind of controlled group where you know that everybody's been tested. But even if you know that, you know, there's still scenarios, as we've seen, the extremely contagious nature of the coronavirus just makes it so dangerous, and I just don't know what level of risk that the institutions themselves are going to be willing to take in lieu of this sport that we so love, you know, that everybody cares so much about. But at the end of the day, you know, life and health is so much more important. So it's a tough, tough decision, and I think we're going to see some movement. Certainly we're seeing movement across the nation. But it's very slow and deliberate, and I don't see things getting, you know, right back to normal here real quickly.
Shifting gear to other Georgia-related news, it came out at the end of last week, the DeAndre Baker robbery arrest, and that took a lot of people, Georgia fans especially, by surprise. How shocked were you to learn about this, and what are your thoughts on the details that we know at this point?
Well, I guess I've been around a long time, so I'm not shocked by a whole lot anymore. I mean, it doesn't surprise me that, you know, an NFL first rounder with a whole lot of money finds himself on the wrong side of the law. It's alarming and very disappointing for DeAndre, and I hope that there's some truth to what his representation, his attorney, is saying, that you know, that things have been blown out of proportion, and you know, sounds like a gambling situation, and somebody owed somebody money, and they're trying to get it back, and you know, but the fact of the matter is, DeAndre Baker found his butt in a jail cell and having to bond out for $20,000. So you know, the authorities will get to the bottom of it. I'm sure, you know, justice will be served here in some form or another. I'm sure DeAndre Baker will be, you know, have good legal representation. But surprise, no, not really. I mean, you know, look, that's the crazy thing about modern professional athletics. I mean, these guys become instant millionaires, particularly first rounders, and you got to be ready for that. I was worried about DeAndre Baker. I don't know if you guys remember, but right after he signed his contract, you know, it came out on Twitter, some of the social media platforms. I think he bought his mom a Rolls Royce,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yep.
And, you know, you just kind of cringe right away. He's like, ooh, golly, I don't know. I was happy to see a short time later that Mecole Hardman had bought his mom a used house, right? You know, and I'm like, ah, much better. I mean, you just never know. And right now you've got Andrew Thomas, you know, just signed with the Giants as well, you know, number four pick. I mean, that's a $30, $40 million contract he's going to get. Everything I know about Andrew Thomas tells me he's not going to buy his parents a Rolls Royce. Not that there's anything wrong with that. But, you know, I just see him being a lot more measured about that. But this is why it's so important that these guys get, training, counseling, advice while they're in college about what to do when their time finally comes. Because last time I checked, Georgia's going to produce a lot more first-rounders, and they need to be prepared for, that ship when it comes in.
Well, Chip, one way to produce first-rounders is to recruit the way Georgia's been recruiting. I really enjoyed your piece over the weekend at AJC.com. You did something that you're better at than us, and that's dive into numbers. We don't do math on the morning show. We let our guests do it instead. You wrote up a very nice piece about the cost of recruiting and how much Georgia spent, namely over a certain stretch after the SEC championship game. But as Greg McGarrity said in your piece, there's nothing to apologize for. The return on investment is showing itself in that number one ranked class. But what are a couple things you took away from that article you wrote about just the cost that Georgia's putting into getting those number one classes?
Well, that was one of those things that last year, the last recruiting cycle, obviously Georgia signed the number one class. But I was immediately struck in the early signing period in December about, wow, look where all Georgia is going to get players right now. I mean, you had guys signed from Calabasas, California, and Las Vegas, Nevada, and all points in between. And, I knew Georgia no longer has a university plane, so I just decided to do some investigating and file some open records requests and just see how is Georgia making this happen. And it was what I thought it was. I tell you, Georgia earns a lot of money as a football program, mm-hmm. as you know, in the SEC. It's a huge business. It's a billion-dollar industry now, college athletics and college football in particular. But the logistics of it were what were really incredible to me, because you look at in a 13-day period on either side of the SEC championship, when you're preparing to play LSU in the biggest game of the year, you have coaches taking 42 flights all over the United States. And the logistics of that, I'm not even sure. I still need to get to the bottom of who is the main travel czar in Georgia's recruiting office who helps coordinate all this, because not seen in all those charts and everything that I produced for that story is like who is on what flight. Like you have Kirby Smart going to some places, but mm-hmm. they're meeting three other coaches in Flagstaff, Arizona, and those coaches are flying from there to Kansas City, Missouri, and from Kansas City, Missouri down to Houston, Texas, where they were at least four or five times, as I saw a certain running back, was coming out of that area, and they visited yep. it quite often. But that's what goes in to being able to – it's one thing to be able to have a national brand. It's another thing to be able to capitalize on it. And I just wanted to look into that and share that information with our readers. And it was some eye-popping numbers, certainly hundreds of thousands of dollars spent over just that 13-day period. And really in the neighborhood of $1 million when it was all said and done. That I didn't even have the because of the open record laws, I didn't even have the last half of January's travel while they were getting ready for National Signing Day on February 5th. So eye-popping numbers, it takes money yeah. to make money, as they say, and that's certainly been the lesson from the Georgia Bulldogs recruiting efforts.
Well, we appreciate you writing it. You can find the whole thing at AJC.com. I highly recommend going and reading that. What else I want to get to before we have to let you go here, another piece that you wrote also at AJC.com I really enjoyed. You listed your top five moments, I think. Is this as covering sports in the media that
yeah,
you wrote?
Yeah.
And three of your top five happened to be Georgia football games. Again, go to the website and read your entire write-up of their Chip's entire write-up, but tell the people what three football games you included on your top five list.
Oh, wow. I don't even have it in front of me right now. I'm trying to remember.
I'll give you a hint. One involved a whole lot of overtimes over in Auburn.
Yeah, there was the four overtime game. I'll never forget that game just because it was so new. That was the first season that they had incorporated the overtime rule, and we honestly didn't know, certainly I'm speaking for myself, didn't know what it looked like. I mean, we knew you were going to get the ball on the 25-yard line, and we all know it now like the back of our hand. But at the time, you know, we weren't sure. We had not seen it employed. And so not only did you have Mike Bobo to Corey Allen with a second left on the clock, you know, to score and send it into overtime, it was like, now what happens? And we didn't know. And then four overtimes later, it actually, I wasn't able to get into this in the piece, was that game resulted in a change of the overtime rule to go to automatically having to go for two after two overtime periods, because those players were exhausted at the end of the night. And really the reason Georgia was able to win that game is Robert Edwards didn't play the regulation or very little in the regulation because he'd been injured. So they deployed him in the overtime period, and he rushed for like 75 yards in the overtime period. The Torin Kirksey getting the winning run, but the number one on the list was the Rose Bowl of 2017/18, of course, and I think I probably share that as being the favorite with a lot of Georgia fans, just because of the venue and then the game. Honestly featured everything you could possibly want in a game. Block kicks, returned interceptions, returned fumbles, squib kicks, you know, long field goals, just a game for the ages. And then you put the venue, the San Gabriel Mountains, everything that we saw about that game was number one on my list, probably number one on a lot of other lists. You know, one event that was not on there, and I intentionally left it off because I'm writing about it today. It's going to appear in our Atlanta Journal-Constitution Bizarre Moments series, is the SEC Tornado Tournament of 2008.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
I would definitely include that in my top five, but I knew I was working on it for my Bizarre Moments series, so you'll be able to read a lot about that. Caught up with Dave Bliss and Sunday Out of Gaines and a bunch of other people who were involved in that tournament, and I'll be retelling that in the at AJC.com today.
It's a fascinating story. Can't wait to see it. I'll certainly dive into it when it's available. Chip, did we leave anything out today?
What? You know, yes. I'm sure we did, and I'll let you guys get to it for the next 2 hours
of
the program.
Did you have something?
No.
Okay. I thought you were about to tell us something. I misunderstood you. I'm sorry, Chip. Good deal. Well,
I got nothing for you, bro.
I got you. Hey, sorry about that. We appreciate your time as always. Looking very forward to that article about the 2008 SEC Basketball Championship, and we will catch you again next Tuesday, as always.
All right.
Thanks, Chip. We appreciate it, bud. Chip Towers of the AJC.com. I misunderstood him. I thought he was about to tell us something.
No, that's what I thought.
I got
too
excited.
I was ready, but hey, it happens. That's the magic of live radio.
I thought he said, of course I left something out, and then he paused. I was waiting for it, the dramatic pause, and it just kept getting more and more awkward, and now all of our listeners think we're fools.
We all make mistakes.
It's all good. Love having Chip every Tuesday. Again.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.